Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is John West, Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. It's always difficult to deal with acts of unspeakable evil, so it's understandable that people have been trying to comprehend the inner demons that drove Anders Behring Breivik to his murderous rampage in Norway on July 22nd. Unfortunately, the effort to uncover the motivations for a horrific act sometimes reveals more about a culture's own stereotypes than anything else. That has certainly been the case with Mr. Breivik, who has been portrayed by CNN and other media outlets as a right-wing Christian fundamentalist. Writing for The Washington Post, Susan Brooks Thistlewaite of Chicago Theological Seminary claims that Breivik exemplifies the temptations to violence in the theologies of right-wing Christianity. According to Thistlewaite, Breivik shows the danger of making supremacist claims that Christianity is the only truth. Except, it turns out, Breivik really isn't a Christian fundamentalist after all. According to his 1,500-plus page manifesto, A European Declaration of Independence, he may not even believe in God. Instead of Christianity, his views are largely based on a toxic mixture of scientific fundamentalism and social Darwinism. Stay tuned for the real story about Anders Behring Breivik and his twisted worldview. In his manifesto, Breivik identifies himself as 100% Christian, and he certainly talks incessantly about defending Christian civilization. But he also makes clear that his Christianity is simply a pose adopted for political reasons. Answering why he chose to align himself with a group supposedly espousing Christian values, he states, "My choice was based purely on pragmatism." He goes on to explain that Christianity has far more mass appeal than nationalism, white supremacy, or paganism, and so it's a more effective banner under which to build a movement. In sum, Breivik views religion like Machiavelli viewed religion, as a political tool. It's worth noting that Machiavelli's The Prince is listed by Breivik as one of his favorite books. As for his own personal religious beliefs and practices, Breivik frankly admits, "I'm not going to pretend I'm a very religious person, as that would be a lie. I've always been very pragmatic and influenced by my secular surroundings and environment." Breivik himself doesn't even appear to believe in God. He frequently identifies himself as a cultural Christian, a term which he defines at one point as being the same as a Christian atheist. Breivik's idea of cultural Christianity has little to do with Christianity as most people would understand that term. In fact, Breivik makes clear that to join his movement for cultural Christianity, it's not required that you have a personal relationship with God or Jesus. Indeed, Breivik calls for the Christian church to be recreated as a nationalistic church which will include those who worship the Norse pagan god Odin. In the end, it turns out that Breivik doesn't even want Christians to influence society apart from social rituals. To the contrary, he demands a secular European state where the church and church leaders will not be allowed to influence non-cultural political matters in any way. This includes science, research and development in all non-cultural areas which will benefit Europe in the future. As can be seen, Breivik harbors a special concern that Christians not be able to influence issues related to science and public policy in any way. He goes on to emphasize that in his view, science trumps religion. Quote, "As for the church and science, it is essential that science takes an undisputed precedence over biblical teachings." Unquote. Why the special concern about science? Because Breivik sees science, not Christianity, as the ultimate savior of society. In his view, advances in biology will make possible a vigorous new form of social Darwinism that will save the Nordic race through positive eugenics. Breivik lists Darwin's Origin of Species as one of the important books he has read, and social Darwinism is never far from the surface in his discussions of social policy. At one point, he laments that social Darwinism was the norm before 1950. Back then, it was allowed to say what we feel. Now, however, we have to disguise our preferences to avoid the horrible consequences of being labeled as a genetical preferentialist. Breivik's social Darwinism rears its ugly head yet again in his discussions of global ecology and population control. He argues that radical policies will have to be implemented to reduce the human population by more than half, or 3.8 billion people. He writes that if second and third world countries cannot curb their production of human offspring, nature will correct their suicidal tendencies as they are unable to feed their populations. He further argues that Western countries should not interfere in this natural process, even if it results in mass starvation. If starvation threatens the countries who have failed to follow our population control guidelines, we should not support them by backing their corrupt leaders or send any form of aid, he writes. Indeed, food aid to third world countries must stop immediately, as it is the primary cause of overpopulation. Perhaps the most blatant example of Breivik's social Darwinism, however, is his endorsement of reprogenetics, a new form of eugenics to allow human beings to take control of their evolution and produce better humans through genetic engineering. According to Breivik, the never-ending collective pursuit for scientific evolution and perfection should become the benchmark and essence of our existence. Breivik is clearly a madman or a moral monster, and his social Darwinism did not cause his murderous rampage. Nor am I trying to suggest that modern Darwinists are somehow responsible for his heinous acts. Of course they aren't. But Breivik's call for a new eugenics, as opposed to his murders, is another matter. The most disturbing thing about Breivik's eugenics proposals is that they are not simply inspired by his own private demons. Instead, they largely spring from mainstream Darwinists, past and present. The part that comes from the past is Breivik's obsession about the preservation of the Nordic race, which he believes features rare characteristics that have been acquired through an evolutionary process which has taken more than 1 million years. Breivik claims that new cultural attitudes towards race mixing are leading people of Nordic ancestry to act unnaturally and undo what 1 million years of evolution has produced. Here, Breivik is echoing the concerns of leading Darwinian eugenists from the early 20th century like Madison Grant, who is cited by name in Breivik's manifesto. In a book called The Passing of the Great Race, Madison Grant denounced the American ideal of the melting pot and insisted that the inevitable result of race crossing was the degeneration of the superior race. The result of the mixture of two races in the long run, he wrote, gives us a race reverting to the more ancient, generalized, and lower type. Grant was especially concerned about the degradation of what he called the Nordic races, because he believed that Nordics were naturally rulers, organizers, and aristocrats. As I write about in Darwin Day in America, some contemporary scientists distanced themselves from part of Grant's rhetoric, but on the whole, he was far from a pariah in the American scientific community. He served as chair of the New York Zoological Society, as a board member of the prestigious American Museum of Natural History, and as counselor of the American Geographical Society. In fact, you can find some of his articles in old issues of National Geographic. Grant's book, The Passing of the Great Race, meanwhile, went through multiple editions, each with a congratulatory preface by leading zoologist Henry Fairfield Osborne of Columbia University. Many of Grant's concerns about race mixing were echoed by leading evolutionary biologists of the era, such as Edward East at Harvard and Charles Davenport, head of the prestigious research lab at Cold Spring Harbor, Long Island. East and Davenport were both members of the elite National Academy of Sciences, and Davenport is widely regarded as one of the founding fathers of the discipline of genetics. Fortunately, although Grant, East, and Davenport were not pariahs in the early 20th century, they are now. But they're also an example of how mainstream social Darwinism of the past can still exert a pernicious influence on the present. However, Breivik does not simply draw on Darwinian thinkers from years gone by. His proposal for reprogenetics comes from a mainstream evolutionary biologist currently on the faculty of one of America's most prestigious Ivy League institutions. The biologist's name is Lee Silver. He's a professor at Princeton and a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Silver was the scientist who coined the term for reprogenetics. And his 1997 book, Remaking Eden, How Genetic Engineering and Cloning Will Transform the American Family, features prominently in Breivik's lengthy manifesto. Unlike Breivik, Silver does not advocate using genetic engineering to preserve the Nordic race. But he does argue that reprogenetics will allow human beings to take control of their evolution and evolve themselves into godlike beings. Although he's concerned that wholesale genetic engineering could lead to a chasm between those who can afford genetic enhancements and those who cannot, Professor Silver spends much of his book dismissing most objections to the new eugenics, which he regards as hollow. While the murderous rampage of Mr. Breivik is obviously not the responsibility of Professor Silver, the same cannot be said about Breivik's chilling call for a new eugenics. There, Professor Silver served, albeit unwittingly, as an intellectual mentor to Breivik, who embraced Silver's program of reprogenetics wholesale, as well as his scientific utopianism. Ideas really do have consequences. You can learn more about Breivik's eugenics ideology and how it was influenced by Professor Silver in my article, The Professor and the Madman, at Evolution News and Views. For ID the Future, this is John West. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.